According to the prosperity gospel, Christ's torment upon Calvary's cross was insufficient. Insufficient to atone for the sins of humankind.
Hank Hanegraaff of the Bible Answer Man, speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Joyce Meyer is emphatic, going so far as to say you cannot go to heaven unless you believe with all your heart that Jesus took your place in hell. So when Jesus said it is finished, the prosperity teachers say, no, it has just begun.
You can listen to Hank Hanegraaff's presentation, Making the Case Against the Prosperity Gospel, on a recording from both of our 2018 Making the Case conferences. This recording contains almost 20 hours of teaching and preaching. We'll send it to you for a year-end tax-deductible donation of $300. Find out more and order at issuesetc.org.
The idea is pretty straightforward, you know, as far as I can tell. There's this tremendous idea that's at the bottom of Western culture that's taken the human race millennia and perhaps an endless amount of time before then, an eternal amount of time before then, to formulate. And the idea is that our consciousness, and that's the center of us, the soul, whatever that happens to be, partakes in the process by which creation comes into being. And we do that through the Logos, which is our capacity to think and to utter words and to engage in dialogue, but more importantly, to do that truthfully. And that to the degree that we're able to do that truthfully, we bring paradise into being rather than hell. And it seems to me that that's as close to objective reality, although it's not precisely objective. It's more than objective reality. It's a kind of meta-reality. It's the most profound truth that you'll ever encounter.
That is Canadian psychology professor Jordan Peterson. That sounds a little metaphysical for a psychologist, but of course, Jordan Peterson never shies away from any subject, including, perhaps in that case, religion. How is it possible that a rather, well, an obscure Canadian psychology professor has become a global guru? He is everywhere. He can be heard almost any place you want to find him in any form of media. He has books and he has followers too. Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about media coverage of Canadian psychology, Professor Jordan Peterson, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
This is really a meteoric rise. I know meteors fall, but this is a meteoric rise of what would be, in any other circumstances, an obscure Canadian psychology professor. How did he become a global guru to so many?
That's a very interesting question, and one that it's impossible to deny that there are religious implications of what this man is doing. But let's get one thing really clear right up front. This man is not a religious believer in a Christian sense. Someone that I have interviewed who knows him very, very well and has discussed this with him at length says that he has flirted with Christian belief. He's kind of scared that Christian belief could be true and has kind of said that. I mean, that's such an overwhelming thing. I'm reminded of the wonderful C.S. Lewis quote about the night that he knelt by his bed and admitted that God was God and proclaimed himself the most reluctant convert in the history of Christendom, someone who was as happy as a mouse who had decided that there was a cat. You get that kind of impression when you're hearing Jordan Peterson talk about the implications of centuries of religious belief. Symbolism, concepts, and he is totally convinced from a scientific and even evolutionary perspective, and that's something where I don't have a dog in that race, you know, when it comes to the serious intellectual ideas he's throwing out there, but basically he believes that the human person, psychologically and even physically and in terms of evolution, seems to be wired for religious belief, and that there is no way around that. And thus he posits that if you're searching for some truth on which you live your life, then it really does matter the decisions you make. It really does matter what you do with your body, what you do with your time. And he uses hell is one of his favorite words to describe what you can get yourself into based on your decisions and kind of lack of control of your own lives. If I may leap ahead theologically, you certainly could say this man is advocating a kind of works theology. What is the role of an actual state of grace, of religious decisions and stuff? You don't expect him to go there because he's not a man who is a traditional Christian. But what's fascinating to me, and what I have trouble articulating when you listen to him, he's definitely saying things over and over and over that are relevant to one of the crucial questions of this age of ours. Everybody uses the term postmodern age. He's definitely suggesting that there are plenty of things that are absolutely right and that there are things that are absolutely wrong and that the human person knows the difference. Now, is he going to go from there to Catholic natural law? Is he going to go from there to common grace? No, he's nowhere near any of that yet. But he knows that he's in religious territory. He knows that people are responding to his musings and speculations on religious concepts. I mean, this is a man who filled a big auditorium in Canada night after night after night, lecturing through his feelings on the Bible and the massive symbols and archetypes of biblical truth and literature. He's not running away from any of this. The two columns that I've just written about him end up in a discussion where he's well aware of what the term logos means, and he knows the opening lines of the Gospel of John, and he knows what logos means in Orthodox theology. And so I was surprised and kind of delighted to find that there was actually a forum online where with two Orthodox scholars and priests and with an Orthodox iconographer, a carver of icons, they get into this lengthy discussion of the concept of logos, some form of revelation and truth that transcends the purely logical and gets into, he would say, the metaphysical. Now, where does the metaphysical come from? That's where I lose him, and things go on. But back to the start of your question, why is he a guru? I don't think anybody knows how he got to where he is right now, with 1.5 million people on his YouTube channel, and like almost a million people on his Twitter feed, with a book that has sold 2 million plus, and he's popping up under all kinds of journalism situations because he has some interesting beliefs on politically incorrect subjects like gender pronouns and things like that. He is what he is. The question of why people started clicking the mouse on his videos, that's your ultimate question, and I cannot answer it.
What do the media make of him? How is he either, you know, why is he invited to sit on a panel or to answer a journalist's questions on television or the radio?
Well, first of all, because he's popular. And if you're trying to reach young listeners, young viewers, young readers, this is a man's name. This is a name that has connected with lots of people. So he's popular because he's popular. How did he get to be popular is the question I just said I can't answer. He deals with a wide range of subjects. I think he kind of burst into consciousness in Canada, primarily with this debate over pronouns, and him basically just saying from a scientific perspective to say that somehow sex and gender isn't related to your DNA, he will just haul off and say, that's crazy talk. Now, the minute you start saying that on BBC, or, you know, Canadian broadcasting, you know, you're going to get more calls. And so there are people who want to politicize him. What I'm fascinated by is that when you listen to the man talk, you can listen to him talk for an hour, and there isn't a single reference in what he's talking about to Donald Trump, to politics, to even political issues as we would normally frame them. He's talking about meaning and truth and how you stop yourself from lying to people, and he's talking about a lot of intensely moral subjects. If you ever listen carefully, you get the impression that politically he would probably be considered a progressive, even in the Canadian context, except for this fact that he's not fond of things that are politically correct related to gender and sex on a lot of things. I hope that helps. He has pushed a couple of hot buttons, and then once the popularity was in place, the wheels just turn within the other wheels and things roll on, as long as people are interested in hearing what he has to say.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly, author of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, about media coverage of Canadian psychology professor Jordan Peterson. He's definitely an evangelist for Jungian psychology. That is the common thread through most of what he says, but he has now taken on a mantle of polymathic expertise. He hardly ever says, "I don't know." We'll talk about that after this.
In Islam, forgiveness is arbitrary. In Christianity, it is in perfect keeping with God's exorbitant, excessive, and extravagant grace.
Hank Hanegraaff of the Bible Answer Man, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And while neither Sunni nor Shia are monolithic respecting details of their end-time scenarios, they are united in reducing Jesus to the administrative deputy of Muhammad and thoroughly human associate of the Muslim Mahdi. Jesus is demoted from the creator of all things, including Muhammad, to a mere caste member in the Muslim eschatological charade.
You can listen to Making the Case Against Islam with Hank Hanegraaff on an audio DVD or thumb drive of our 2018 Making the Case conferences. We'll send it to you for a financial gift of $300. Order today at issuesetc.org.
For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. This child, Jesus Christ, is the focus of every Christmas card that Emmanuel Press offers. Whether in stained glass, illumination, or classic works of art, Christmas cards from Emmanuel Press joyfully confess our Savior's birth with the words of Scripture and the poetry of hymns. Visit their website at emmanuelpress.us to create a custom assortment of cards. emmanuelpress.us.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the 2nd century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love of truth.
The 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, I haven't watched a ton of him. I have been paying more attention to Jordan Peterson since our last conversation. But I'm curious. He is asked to opine. He is asked to opine on virtually any subject available to modern man. Does Jordan Peterson ever say, "I don't know"?
That's actually an interesting part of his appeal, and I've heard a lot of people mention this. He says, "I don't know a lot," and especially when dealing with subjects, you can tell when he respects a subject enough to say, "I don't know." And this is one of the things that intrigues people about him. When he gets into issues of art and beauty, philosophy and religion, he frequently will say things like, "You know, I haven't read enough about that to really be able to tell you what I think. I find that really intriguing. I know that's a crucial part of humanity and the human story, and I'm just not ready to talk about that yet. I don't know enough." So what you'll find him is when you take his subject, depth psychology, and you apply it to the literature. This is a man with something like 100 published academic papers on different topics before he launches himself into the public marketplace. So he has a lot of academic research, and sometimes this academic research applies to things like, what do women want in the workplace? What do women say they want? What makes people successful or unsuccessful? And then the topic that more than any other has shoved him out into public life is his astonishing emotional. I mean, this is a man who tears up frequently talking about the plight of young people in the Western world who seem to have nothing to live for, no way of controlling their lives. You know, the whole, you know, that sign-on you hear all the time when you run into promos for appearances. This is Dr. Jordan Peterson. Clean up your damn room. Stand up straight. Throw your shoulders back. Try to live like you're a hero. You know, and you hear him say things like this. He's like he wants to shake young people by their shoulders and say, at some point, you're going to have to make decisions that get you away from the video game screen and into adulthood, into family life, into mature relationships in which you have the potential to reach your emotional and human potential. Potential is a huge word with him, and grow up, you know, into things that make life worth living for real. So it's this, there's a humility about the subjects, especially, I guess we could call them the transcendent subjects, that he would say he doesn't know enough about. Then you throw in this fatherly, stern, blunt willingness to speak truth to laziness and to speak truth to entertainment and to this world of ours. So those are the subjects that drug him out into the open. I'm actually intrigued that he will sit up on a stage with full-scale, fire-breathing evangelists for modern atheism and go toe-to-toe with them, even though he himself is not coming from a traditional religious point of view. He's questioning, I don't know how you say this, but he's questioning agnosticism as well as questioning atheism. He's saying that we're wired for something other than that. And you keep saying that in gigantic lecture halls full of hundreds or thousands of people, and some people are going to walk out of the room and say you're raising religious questions. And lots of clergy have said that. And now you're beginning to find intelligent religious people beginning to dialogue with him, like this Orthodox iconographer, Jonathan, I believe it's pronounced Peugeot, of Quebec, you know, who are beginning to help him realize that he's close to saying what traditional faith is saying, whether he knows it or not, and that he's not saying everything the religious want him to say, but he's saying enough that they're intrigued to know where he's coming from. And the fact that he's popular doesn't hurt at all. They want to talk to this guy.
If there's a news story that requires an expert in psychology, I understand why the media contact Jordan Peterson. I understand that because he has an undergraduate and a PhD in clinical psychology. Why do the media request interviews with him outside his realm of expertise, do you think?
Well, because there actually are some psychological concepts, and there's a ton of related science related to issues like gender and marriage and what it means to be healthy or unhealthy in terms of sexuality. And can't you begin to see the headlines go fleeting through your mind when I list those subjects? You can get into a lot of trouble talking about those subjects. And when they talk to him, I mean, you know, the famous interview in Britain where, you know, someone was grilling him over and over about how what he's saying about women is offensive, and the interviewer just kept coming at him, and he finally said, look, you're saying a lot of things that you would think are highly offensive to me. Yet, you know, I don't mind you saying them. What makes you think that other people who disagree with you have no right to say what they believe? And there's this long pause on the other side where the interviewer sits there, and finally Peterson just kind of goes, gotcha. And that is the moment, more than any other, that launched him, kind of like this cheap thrill of watching somebody being interviewed by television journalists, and he's handling it. He's handling them. They're not getting the best of him. There are a lot of people who are upset with the media and upset with a lot of trends in our society that enjoy watching a psychologist with a PhD from Toronto as opposed to, I don't know, somebody from a Christian university somewhere in Virginia be interviewed about things like that and handle them, you know, and sort of get the job done. There's a lot of people that want to cheer for him, and then there's a lot of people that hate it when he does that. And these are the strong feelings that keep putting him on the air.
How do you explain his, in a lot of ways, once you start asking these questions, it's Pandora's box. If you have Jordan Peterson on to talk about his bailiwick, that's fine. You have him on to talk about something else because there may be some overlap, as you have pointed out. Then he's asked to talk about things where he has no real expertise, but he obviously has well-considered opinions. How has he avoided the hot-button issues beyond the issue of gender pronouns?
No, he's waded into a lot of things, but what he doesn't do is get political. And, I mean, I've literally read articles that say this guy is like the perfect voice for the Trump age. He's not. He isn't saying anything, basically, that would affirm a kind of Trumpian approach to public life, let alone private life. The fact that he's disturbing many people on the left doesn't make him a figure of the right. And I can't stress that too much. I don't think it's fair to call this man a figure on the political or even cultural right. Here's what I will say again. You and I have talked about it before. The book by James Davison Hunter, Culture Wars, The Struggle to Define America, is the book that has driven me in my journalism and in my academic work more than any other since I first read it back in about 1990, 1991. The heart of that book is that our world is no longer defined by ordinary denominational religious differences, but instead it's defined by two essential camps, a camp that believes that there is transcendent, absolute truth, and that it's possible to know it. And another camp that says all truth is personal and evolving and changing over time. One is called the camp of the Orthodox by Hunter, and the other is called the camp of the progressives. So along comes this guy. He's a non-believer. He is not a religious man. And he's quoting Jung, and he's quoting Darwin, and he's quoting all kinds of hard science and saying, there's something about the human person who demands that there be actual truths that they can follow in their life that are bigger than their own individual short lives and experiences. It's like he's on a quest for some naturalistic or sort of metaphysical or psychological origin for a concept of absolute truth. Things you can base your life on. 12 Rules, An Anecdote for Chaos, you know, the name of his book. That's going to interest a lot of clergy who realize how big this debate is over whether or not there is such a thing as absolute truth. They're fascinated with this guy, and the more intelligent ones know that he's not completely on their side on everything. But the fact that he's asking all the questions that they want to see answered in the public square, and that he's answering a lot of them with fascinating, entertaining, intriguing, even at times emotional answers, that makes them want to pay attention. I do think that there are people who are going way too far. I've literally heard people say, oh, Peterson simply has to be a Christian. He's just hiding it because he knew if he came out as a Christian, it would hurt his book sales and ticket sales. I think that's a silly response to this man. I mean, it also implies an essential dishonesty in a man whose entire thought related to human behavior seems to be start off with attempting to tell the truth. And once you start attempting to tell the truth, you're going to learn an awful lot about yourself. That's not the sort of guy that I think would be trying to pull off some sort of massive fraud, some sort of closet evangelical or something.
So do you think that fascination that the media may maintain with him is kind of, he is a unique museum specimen that they didn't believe existed anymore? They thought that someone who wasn't an overt believer, a Christian, for example, no one who isn't an overt believer could possibly still hold on to that tired notion of objective truth.
Yeah, and the fact that he's willing to go on a stage with some of the most famous and articulate atheists in our world today, they sell out the hall, and then the two of them start debating on what it means to be a good person and what it means to believe that there's things that are true and things that are false. And he's sitting in a chair across from Sam Harris, for Pete's sake. You know, one of the four horsemen of the atheist apocalypse, as people were saying a number of years ago. That's a stage, and that's an audience that traditional religious leaders are not reaching right now. And a lot of people are saying that atheists online, some of them are starting to call themselves atheists in transition, and they don't know where they're going. And part of why they don't know where they're going is that Peterson doesn't know where he's going. But they're with him, and they're intrigued, and whatever he's doing is taking them. The way Jonathan Peugeot told me the other day about it, he says, I'm getting calls from people who are saying, he's raising questions that the only place I'm finding people proposing answer is in the ancient church. In the symbolism, in the beauty, in the worship, in the music, in the prayers, in the art of the ancient church. Am I going to have to go there? And of course, Jonathan will say, well, sure, let's talk about it. And he said he's given up trying to keep track of how many people have contacted him who are atheists in transition. Well, don't you know a lot of clergy that you live with and work with and talk with that wish they had people calling them up saying things like that? Something about Peterson is connecting. with this chaos in our world today, and he's discussing where do we need to go to try to find answers. And he does not claim to have found them or know the absolute lock-solid answers. But it's clear that he's rejecting a lot of the radical individualism and moral relativism and uncertainty that is at the heart of our age. And that's going to make you controversial.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, if he were to convert, would the media drop him like a hot potato?
Oh, that's a fabulous question. My suspicion is yes. There would be like a huge flare-up about it or something. And yes, I do think at that point you would see him vanish. Because at the moment, his secularism is part of what at least allows him to be intelligent in the view of a lot of people in the marketplace.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
On the other side of the break, we're going to talk doubt and belief in the middle of miscarriage. Stephanie Traffigan will join us, co-author of the book Never Forsaken. Her chapter's titled, I Believe, Help My Unbelief. Stay tuned.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Several Issues Etc. regular guests are candidates for leadership positions in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Every LCMS congregation has received nomination forms for the president and vice presidents of the synod. Please encourage your pastor and congregational leaders to fill out and return these nomination forms before February 20th of 2019. Learn more at issuesetc.org/nominations. issuesetc.org/nominations.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
With religion in America continuing its historic decline over yet another year, many may wonder, how fares the LCMS? This November, the Lutheran Witness is once again shedding light on the state of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Find the latest on global mercy work, missions, membership statistics, schools, and more in this special edition. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the world through a Lutheran Christian perspective.
At Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Rockland, California, we keep the focus on Christ every Sunday with ancient liturgy, preaching from the lectionary, and celebration of the sacrament of the altar. Come be a part of the evangelical and Catholic faith as handed down to us in the Lutheran Confessions. We celebrate the Divine Service every Sunday at 8 o'clock and 10:30 with Sunday School for all ages at 9:15. To learn more, visit holycrossrockland.org.